if you can let your body just relax as much as possible. Let it be in a comfortable position. And just suggest taking some deep breaths, perhaps. Just suggest to it to relax, to let go of any stress or tension, and to relax itself into the environment, into the chair, into the floor, into whatever is holding it. Let all of the muscles go. Just run your consciousness through your body, and any area that seems tense, just spend a moment with it to help it relax. Just be totally present to your body. Allow yourself simply to feel the body, to be embodied, to appreciate your body, and let your body relax in that appreciation. Let your mind relax also. Just allow yourself to appreciate your mind and give it some space to relax, to think, to feel, to imagine, to just simply be itself. See if you can simply relax into the totality of your experience. We hear the chimes, some noises in the park. Footsteps and rustling. The physical sensations of your body. Thoughts and feelings and images in your mind. See if you can simply relax into all of those changing sensations and appreciate them. Objectify them. And appreciate them all as part of this creation, part of Ishvara. Every feeling, every perception, every feeling, thought. Simply allow them all to be as they are, as part of the creation. without trying to control or change. Just simply relax and allow what is to be, whatever that is. Let the mind relax or root itself in you, in your own presence. Again, without any tension or trying to think in a certain way, feel or be a certain way. Just simply relax into your own presence, your own being. Relaxing into your own being, and at the same time relaxing, expanding into the totality of your experience. Not hanging on. If the mind has any tension, don't reject it. Simply allow that tension to take place in a relaxed mind. But the one who's aware or holding the tension or the disturbance, be relaxed into my own presence. My mind relaxed into my own presence, my own being. Is present to whatever thoughts or perceptions. Are taking place. Whatever feelings. Padram karne vishrinuyama devaha Padram pashe makshapirya chatraha Stirairangai istushtu vagum sastanubihi Vyashema devahitan yadayuhu Swastina indro vrittashtravaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swastina sarsho arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We're in verse 3 of this new section, Yada Pashyaha. Yada Pashya Pashyate Rukma Varanam. Yada Pashya Pashyate Rukma Varanam. Kartaram isham purusham brahma yonim Kartaram isham purusham brahma yonim Tada vidvan punya pape vidhuya Tada vidvan punya pape vidhuya Niranjana paramam samya upayati Niranjana paramam samya upayati Yada pashyaha Yada pashyaha pashyate rukmavarnam kartaram isham purusham brahma yonim tada vidvan punya pape vidhuya niranjanaha paramam Samyam Upaiti. Remember the two birds, right? Two birds sitting on the same tree. The one bird, the jiva bird, is eating all of the fruits, all of the different fruits, bitter from bitter to sweet. And the Ishwara bird is sitting in its own life, swaprakashatvam, not doing anything at all. So now here, we still have to keep that verse in mind. Yada pashyaha pashyate. Pashyate is the same as pashyati. Yada, when pashyaha. Pashyaha is the one who is able to see. A blind person can't see. So a person who is able to see is a pashyaha. But here, it's the person who is able to see the atma, means the adhikari, the one who is gaining knowledge but has the capacity to gain knowledge. So that one who is pashyaha, when the one who is able to see, the viveki, the one who has discrimination, who has those qualities that are necessary to allow this knowledge to take place, the mind is available. That's the pashyaha. So when that pashyaha pashyati sees, so when that pashyaha, when that person who has the qualities, the capabilities of seeing, when that person sees purusham, the purusha who is rupmavarnam. Rupmavarnam means gold, the color of gold. The color of gold means gold, like gold. Gold which is self-evident in the bhasha, and Swamiji also talks about in his bhasha, in Shankara, the gold doesn't rust or stain or tarnish. Gold always remains as gold. It's self-shining, right? Nothing ever happens to it. It remains the same. So the purusha, the individual atma, the self. So here the purusha is the atma. That self is rupmavarnam. It is self-evident, self-effulgent, like gold. It never changes. It never varnishes. It never tarnishes. It always stays exactly the same, rupmavarnam. Varna means color. Rukma means gold. So what color am I? It's the Atma. It's self-shining, self-evident, self-effulgent. Okay, so that's Rukma Varna. So when the Pashyaha, the one who is able to see, Pashyate, sees the Purusha, who is Rukma Varna, that Purusha, who was Karuttaram, who was the doer, right? The Jiva bird, right? This Atma, the Atma, is the Karta, is the doer, right? There's no Jiva bird and Ishwara bird. There's Satyam and Mitya. The Jiva bird who takes himself or herself, right, to be the Karta. This is one translation, one way of unfolding this that Swamiji likes. And it seems very solid. It's a little different than Shankara, but I'll tell Shankara's also. So the one who has the viveki, the one who's able to see, when that one sees the Purusha, the Atma, which is the Karta, which is the Jiva bird, the one who says, I do this and I do that, the one who is Karta Bhokta, the Jiva is all often identified by these two words. The Karta is the doer. I am doing this, I am doing that. The Bhokta is the one who is the enjoyer. So the doer and the enjoyer, the one who takes responsibility for the actions. I do this, and these I reap the results. Right? That's the bhokta. I do the action, and I enjoy the results, the fruits of my action. So the jiva is often referred to as karta bhokta. In the first verse here, the jiva bird, is being referred to as the bhokta. Here the jiva bird is being referred to as the karta, the doer. So now it says, yada, when the viveki, the adhikari, qualified student, when he sees the purusha, who is the karta, because yourself, the self that you take to be the doer, it is that self, the one, when you say, I am the doer, or I am the enjoyer, the self that you are referring to, so when you see that self, that is the karta, to be Isha. So it says here, Isham Purusham. So when you see the jiva bird, the doer, to actually be Ishwara, the Lord, the second bird, the jiva bird is in fact the Ishwara bird. The karta and bhokta are mitya, right? The self of, the true self, of the jiva bird is the conscious being that's abiding inside, which is who? Ishwara. Now, who is so Isham? Isham means the one, the jiva bird, the Ishwara bird that's abiding inside. We have these two birds sitting in the body. There's the one conscious being, the Atma, that does nothing. It just abides, self-shining. Then there's the one that says, I am doing this, I am doing that. It's the jiva bird. When I recognize the truth of the one who says, I am doing this and I am doing that, I am enjoying this and I am enjoying that, that's just the ahankara. Right? When I recognize the truth of that, the self of that one is Isham, is the Lord, is the one who abides silently in my antakarana. And then I recognize this silent self, the one who is just self-evident, to be, and here's where the Mahavakya comes in, Brahma Yonim. Brahma Yonim, Yonim means the womb or the cause. So Brahma Yonim can be taken in two ways. In this way, we take it like this. Even the Yoni of Brahmaji. Brahmaji means Hiranyagarbha, the one who manifests as the entire creation. So the Atma, this conscious being, that inside, which is doing nothing, which is simply abiding, quietly abiding, it is this one that is the very cause, the very being, the very self of the whole creation, of Brahmaji, which is the one who manifests as the entire creation. So that's the Mahavakya. So it says, now this is what it says. So when the one who is able to see, when the Viveki, the adhikari, is the one who is able to see. When he actually sees, he or she actually does see this Atman, this self that I am, the Purusha, this person that I am. Right? Purusha means person. It refers to the self, yourself. So another, just in good English, when the one, the Viveki, the qualified student, when that qualified student sees herself or his self. And so when you see yourself, the karta, the doer, when you see that this karta, this doer, this purusha here, this person, is rupmavaranam, is self-evident consciousness, right? Self-evident consciousness, and it is isham. It is the Lord. It is the self-evident Lord, the one who is self-shining inside here, inside this upadhi, inside this body. And this one, this conscious being that is self-shining, is Brahma-yonim, is the womb of even Brahmaji. The womb means the cause of even Brahmaji. That's one way of taking it for Sanskrit students as a Tat-Purusha, the yonim of Brahmaji, right? Tat-Purusha, samasa type of compound. It can also be taken as a Karmadarya, the yoni, the womb, the cause, which is Brahman. Now that I'm taking it, that's a little different than saying, because the word Brahman, if I take it in the masculine, it means Brahmaji, the one who is manifest as this entire creation. The one who manifests as the entire creation is Brahmaji. If I take Brahman as the neuter, then Brahman is the Sat-Chit-Ananda, the conscious being, the self-evident conscious being, which is the very cause, the very self of the whole creation. In a sense, you're doing the same thing. You're saying the same thing. But the emphasis is different. One is showing Brahma, Brahman, as the yoni, which is the cause of the whole creation. The other is just saying that cause, which is Brahman. Right? So the cause, the yoni, means the womb. The yoni, which is Brahman. Okay? So in any case, I see that this conscious self that I am, the one who is the self of the karta, the doer, and I say, I am a doer, the self that I'm referring to, that self is actually Isha. It is the Ishwara bird, the bird which is abiding silently, not involved in any action at all. And it is that bird I see as the Lord, as Brahman, as the one from whom, who is the cause of the entire creation. And so then, that's when I see I am the whole. I see that this conscious being that actually is doing nothing. So now I've differentiated myself from the ahankara, the I notion that says, I am doing this, I am doing that. The I notion is an object of my awareness. Right? So if I say, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, that's objectified. That's the jiva bird. I am the one who silently abides, illumining that one who says, I am doing this and I am doing that. I, in fact, am the I am the self of that mind that says, I am doing this and I am doing that. These thoughts come and go. They don't touch myself at all. I just abide there, illumining this chatter. You know, but I silently illumine. Now, what is the nature, though, of my silent me? Just the simple me that is sitting here, indwelling this body. It's a recognition that this me is the self of the universe. It is this me that is the self of all beings. It is this me that is the very being of this, the very cause of the entire creation. Just like if I look at it as from a standpoint of a jiva, if I have an imagination in my mind, I am the self of that imagination. Right? I am the consciousness, I am the existent being that is the self of that imagination. Like that, I am this conscious being which illumines the mind and the body and the sense organs and the world, it is this self that is the self of the entire world. And so the being that I am is the being that you are, is the being that you are, is the being that you are. And that this being that I am is the very being and substance of the entire creation. So having seen that, when the pashyaha, when the one who's capable of seeing, who's able to see, and that adhikari, sees this Purusha, who the Purusha, which is the self-effulgent awareness, which is the very self of the doer. It is the Isha, the Lord inside, right? The Ishwara inside. sees this as the whole self of the entire creation. So when that vision is there, tada, then the vidvan. Tada means then. So it starts with yada, when, tada, then the vidvan, the one who knows. Now, that's the jnani, the one who knows this, the one who knows myself. That's the vidvan. Right? Vid means to know. Vid, but the one who has vid, the one who has knowledge is the vidvan. So, tada, when that vid, so then, tada, then, that vidvan, punya pape, dwandva dual, punya pape, accusative dual, viduya, gives up, is freed from, in the climbable past participle, viduya, with the V, so the ya affix, viduya, gives up, abandons, is freed from, completely free from, has dugda, has burnt away, totally released from punya and papa. Punya and papa are all the karmas, positive and negative. Even the punya karmas, karmas which give positive results like swargaloka or better bodies and all of this, they're also a bondage, right? Because I'm doing this action to get this result, I'm still bound then by samsara. They're called golden chains. The golden chains of punya. So the wise person, the vidvan, is released from both karmas, from all karmas, from all bondage. Why? Because the atma, yourself, is not a karta. Not karta, not bhokta. Yourself is not performing an action to be accruing punya and papa. Right? Atma isn't performing an action. And atma, yourself, also is not experiencing the results of the action also. The mind experiences the results of the action. Right? In other words, if I do, even in samsara, if I do a kind act, chances are, in the doing of that kind act, my mind will experience a certain level of peace. If I pursue a desire and I fulfill the desire, right, my mind will experience a certain amount of peace, which will then cause an emotional state in the mind. Relaxed mind will experience different types of joy and bliss. If I do a negative act, an act coming out of anger, or I fail to fulfill a desire, my mind will then enjoy probably some sort of stress or tension, which is a state of pain. So your mind, the mind which the ahankara identifies with, that's what creates the jiva bird, is the identification with this object of experience. Say you're having a negative experience in the mind. The jiva bird is the one who says, I am hurting. Right? That's the ahankara, also illumined. Atma illumines the experience, positive or negative, punya or papa, and it illumines equally the ahankara that says, I am happy or sad. Right? Both are just, they're mitya. Both are just equally thoughts. The Atma is not becoming happy or sad. The Atma always remains the same. And so the Atma doesn't experience punya or papa. The mind experiences punya or papa. The Atma is the conscious being, rupma varna, self-evident, self-effulgent being that I am. I simply illumine these states of experience. Now what about when I recognize my identity is with the Atma and not with the state of experience that's being illumined, the changing state of experience that's being generated. When my identification is with me, then I am freed from those states of experience. Right? You can't say that the Atma is happy or sad. The Atma, the self, is the self. So what the nature of the self is your nature. And that's the nature that abides and has always been abiding and always will be abiding. It's never not been. It has never not been. It's never not been your experience, in fact. It's just that that self-abiding samatvam, sameness of being has always been superimposed upon the emotional state. It's been superimposed on the perception. When it's superimposed, it's lost into combined with whatever it is superimposed upon. It's mixed with, like the red hot iron ball. And that's what allows for the ahankara to say, I am sad or I am happy. There you're identifying as a bhokta. You become a bhokta by that false identification. Or I did this or I did that. You become a karta, a doer, by that false identification. That false identification is simply caused by the superimposition of your presence, of who you are, with what you're experiencing. The one, the pashyaha, when one sees myself, the bird, the Ishwara bird, that's not doing anything, then, at that time, I'm totally released from punya and papa in terms of karta, in terms of my actions, and in terms of what I, in the results of the actions I enjoy. That doesn't mean that those actions don't take place. For instance, say I'm a jnani. I'm a vidvan. I know. Right?
Yeah.
But I know fully myself. But if I do an act in samsara in the world, I will experience the results of that. In other words, if I walk across the room as this body, I walk across the room, I go across the room. Right? If I take a drink of water, I enjoy the water. Who does? The upadhi. The upadhi, which as long as it is here, is enjoying my consciousness as the jiva bird. But the jiva bird has become mitya. Right? It's become mitya for me. Because all the while, I'm enjoying the results of the action. If I do an adharma, I experience the pain of that adharma. If I do a dharma, I experience the joy of that dharma. You know? But I don't. I, the atma, the jiva bird does. Right? The mind does. And I don't identify with the mind anymore. It's not that the experience isn't there. And it's not that the experience is not being suffered. Say, for instance, there's a jnani and an ajnani. And both get a cut on their leg. In exactly the same place. Right here. Right on the leg. Is it that the ajnani, the one who doesn't have knowledge, experiences pain, but not the jnani? No. The leg hurts. Right? The leg hurts. But for the one, the ajnani, there's no one there that doesn't hurt. There's no atma there that's differentiated from the body. Mm-hmm. It's not that the pain is not there. The pain is there for both. Okay, now say, something happens, the mind is hurt. Mind has hurt feeling, whatever, something's happened in the mind. For the jnani and the ajnani. Are you saying that for the jnani doesn't experience the mind, the condition of mind? The condition of the mind is experienced. Because that is the condition of the mind. Right? Whatever that condition is. For the ajnani, the condition of the mind is experienced. For the jnani, the condition of the mind is experienced. Whatever the condition is. But for the ajnani, the ahankara, the jiva bird, is the only thing there. I am the mind. The superimposition. That's it. That's their inner reality. For the jnani, that is not the reality at all. The ahankara does not land on the mind. The ahankara is resolved into the atma. There is no I notion. The I correctly labels me. Right? Experience is still there. Right? The set of experiences may be different. That's true because the person who has jnana, knowledge, that mind doesn't get itself into so much pain, so many superimpositions, so much projection of atma onto the world. So it doesn't get into so much pain. But that's another issue. The issue I'm pointing out here is that what is there to be experienced is experienced by both. Here's an ajnani, here's a jnani. The jnani is looking through the sense organs at the world. The ajnani is looking at the sense organ, through the sense organs at the world. Both see the world. One walks, the other walks. Both walk. One thinks, the other thinks. Both think. One feels, the other feels. Both feel. But one, there is no differentiation. And so, whatever the punya and the papa, whatever the good karma or the bad karma that is done, I am the doer of that for the ajnani. And I am the enjoyer of the fruits. For the jnani, I never do anything. In spite of doing, I never do anything. In spite of doing, because the upadhi is here, and I said the words, I committed the action, from the standpoint of the upadhi. And at the same time, I've never done anything. Satyam nitya. You know, it's recognizing the conscious me that is abiding here, that is innocent, and is always the same. No matter what, you can commit a murder. That's why, not that I suggest anybody commit a murder. But this murder, the killer and the killed, is used in, as an example in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Katha Upanishad. The one who thinks I'm a killer or I've been killed doesn't know the self. They use an extreme example to show, the most extreme example they can use, to show that my being is free. The one who recognizes oneself that this karta is actually the Atma. This one that you've taken to be the karta, the doer. This very one is the Atma. That one, viduya, punya pape, is free from both punya and papa. Niranjanaha. That one is niranjanaha. Cannot be stained in any way. Is free from any type of stain or taint. Because consciousness is not an object that you can throw ink on. Right? Consciousness, consciousness, the satchit that you are, is not an object that you can stain or tarnish or make impure. And consciousness also has no ignorance. Standpoint of consciousness illumines ignorance. All of the kartritvam, the doership, and the bhoktritvam, the enjoyership, all of these things are products of ignorance. They exist within samsara. The jiva bird is part of samsara. Right? That's where the ahankara is identified with the mind. It's all part of samsara. The atma is the one that illumines. Yourself is the one that illumines the samsara. And that one cannot be at any time ever stained by samsara, because you're not an object in the creation to be touched or stained in any way. And so because of that, you are unstainable, untouchable. And because of that, you are the very best friend to your mind. When your mind, instead of being subject to the superimposition born of ignorance that causes the mind to say, I, the Atma, am the mind, right? Once that, because of knowledge, once that superimposition, that ignorance has been removed, and so now the mind is objectified, for now the Atma, which is the truth, the being, the self of the mind, the changeless, untouchable, unstainable, whole being that illumines the mind, that self is the best friend of the mind. It is that self that's the beloved of the mind. That's where the mind relaxes, because no one can get me there. No one can touch the self, and no one can take the self away from the mind. And so the mind's love affair, instead of being with an object in samsara, or narcissistically with your own body, mind, sense organs, with your own upadhi, that's narcissism, right? It's not narcissism. It's the love of the mind is for the Atma, for the self, which is safe and secure, whole and complete ananda, satchit ananda. It's that on the ananda of the beloved, the ananda which is the ananda of the self, not some bliss state in the mind. It's that niranjanaha, it's that self which is free from stain that is the best friend for the mind. That's where the mind roots itself. That's its home. That's its beloved. And it's from there that it experiences the world. So then it says, so niranjanaha means cannot be objectified. Then it says, paramam samyam upaiti. Then that one, right, freed from punya and papa, who is niranjanaha, no longer subject to avidya, to ignorance, or to the effects of ignorance. I'm a doer, I'm a bad person, I'm a good person, I'm becoming a bad person again, and now I'm all of these stains. That the one who is niranjana, not subject to any of that, that one who is that now, that one upaiti, that one gains, that one attains paramam samyam, means that advaita, Paramam means the supreme, that which cannot be bettered. Samyam is sameness, means there is no duality there. Everything is one without a second. That's what we mean by sameness. Like in samsara we can say, you know, this flower is the same as this flower. Gee, they're very close, aren't they? It's not that kind of sameness. It's the samyatvam of Advaita, the one without a second. The self that I am can never be changed in any way. And there is nothing other than it. It's not like you and I are, I am like you. It's not that kind of sameness. It's I am you. I am you. I am Ishvara. I am the self. I am the self of the whole. I'm not like the self. I'm not like Ishvara. I'm not like you. I am you. I am the same as you. I am the same as you. I am the same as Ishvara. The Paramam Samyam means I am you. Right? If I say I'm the same as you, it's not I'm like you. I am you. So that Paramam Samyam is the Advaita. Shankara has a nice term here. Advaya Lakshanam, he says. He says, the sameness, Dvaita Vishyani Samyani Ettaha Aravanchi, he says. All these objects in the world where you can say, this one is like this one, they're Samyam, they're similar. You can, in the world, you can line up all kinds of objects. All these objects, these are similar, these are the same. Right? These aren't, that's not Paramam. That's not Paramam. That's not the, that's a lower type of sameness. Aravanchi means it's lower. That's not the same. This is Paramam Samyam. Advaya Lakshanam. Paramam Samyam means Advaya Lakshanam, means we're defining it as Advayam, the sameness where there is no difference. So the one who is the Jnani, the one who knows this, is the Vidvan, who has knowledge of this Atma, that this Jiva bird is Ishvara, and this the Ishvara bird, and this Ishvara bird is Brahman, is the self of this whole creation. That one attains this, being freed from Punya and Papa, that one attains this Advaya, this Samyam, the sameness. I am the same in all beings. I'm one in all beings. That's a beautiful verse. Let's read the next one. Not that we'll do it all. Prano hyesha yath sarva bhutaira vipati. Prano hyesha yath sarva bhutaira vipati. Vijanan vidvan pavate nati vadi. Vijanan vidvan pavate nati vadi. Atma krida. Atmaratihi kriyavan. Atmakrida atmaratihi kriyavan. Esha brahmavidam varishtaha. Esha brahmavidam varishtaha. Pranaha hi eshaha yaha sarva bhutaihi vibhati. Vijanan vidvan bhavate na ativadi. Atma kridaha atma ratihi kriyavan eshaha brahmavidam varishtaha. We'll just read through it, and then I'll do it next week. Pranaha hi eshaha. The one who is prana, he who is prana. Prana is a word for Hiranyagarbha. Means the one, the Lord, who gives the whole vital force to the creation. The conscious being of the creation is prana. So it's a word for Hiranyagarbha. Means the subtle conscious being, right? This is this physical world that is experienced as the, like the body. And that's what we call Virat. Hiranyagarbha is the conscious being, the the conscious being that gives the whole vital force to this creation. So it's sometimes called pranaha. So this pranaha, sarva bhutaihi vibhati, who shines variously as all beings. Sarva bhutaihi. This is instrumental plural. It's called the form of instrumental that for Sanskrit students. It's called ittam bhave. And that translates, it's a Panini Sutra. It's all, it's used enough that it needs to be known. Instead of, it, we need to understand ittam bhave tritiya. Instead of meaning by the tritiya, the third case meaning by or with or because of the normal meanings, accompaniment, this type of thing, it means as the condition of being. So now if we say this prana, this Hiranyagarbha, the Lord, vibhati, shines variously, third person singular, as this, as all beings. That's the condition that in which he shines. Right, so that's called ittam bhave. He shines in being in that manner, is literally what it means. So it's called ittam bhave tritiya. So whatever the action that is being done, this is the manner that that is taking place. So here, esha pranaha, Ishwara, the Lord, like Hiranyagarbha, shines variously in the form of all beings. So this entire, sarva means all, bhuta means beings. So here's this entire creation, all of the beings here. Everything, every element, every elemental, every living creature, everything in the whole creation, the Lord, the Ishwara, shines as this whole, okay, in the form of this whole. Pranaha eshaha, this prana, this Hiranyagarbha, yaha, who, okay, the Lord who, sarva bhutaihi vibhati, shines variously as all of his beings, vijanan, the one knowing that, the jnani, the vidvan, vijanan, present participle, right? Vijanan, knowing that clearly as a vidvan, vijanan, knowing clearly, having direct immediate knowledge of that, vinayani, knowing that Lord who shines variously as all beings, that one, that vidvan, that then now, vijanan, knowing the vidvan, that jnani, that one has self-knowledge, bhavate na ativadi, ativadi, from ativadin. That one does not become bhavate is bhavati. Na bhavati ativadi. That jnani really has nothing more to say. Ativadi means you can't speak beyond that. There's nothing more to say beyond that. Because what that jnani sees is, in fact, everything is Atma. Everything is Atma. Everything is Brahman. What more is there to say? What can we say beyond that? What's the new idea? What's the new idea beyond that? Because all new ideas are part of mitya. All ideas, all philosophies, all intellections, everything that comes up in the creation, all beings, all duality, everything that exists is what? Atma. My mind is Atma, my thoughts are Atma, my intellections are Atma, all the books I've written are Atma, all the books I haven't written are Atma. The whole thing is Atma, right? So what is the Ati? Ati means to go beyond. Ativadi means to come up with a philosophy or an idea or a conception that is beyond that. The Vidvan, na bhavati, does not become an Ativadi because there is no going beyond that. Whatever you take, whatever you have to say, whatever thing you create that is beyond that is only that. Right? So whatever philosophy you have, that is fine. That's that too. Right? Whatever you think, that's that too. So that's a really amazing thing for the Upanishad to say. Right? It's basically saying the jnani has nothing more to say. There's nothing more to say beyond that, what's already been said. Because what's been revealed now is the self of whatever you have to say. So you can't go beyond that. So there's nothing lies on the other side of it. I'll just translate this. Atmakridaha. That jnani, the one who knows, Atmakridaha, sports only with oneself. That means that you can fully enjoy, you fully enjoy what you do. Because what you're doing is, I'm the Atma playing with the Atma. So I can engage in the world. And then Atma Ratihi, I enjoy in sporting in the world, meaning whatever I'm doing, I am enjoying myself. What's the inner affect? Where does the mind abide? Where's the ananda of the mind? Atma Ratihi. I am enjoying myself. Sporting with myself, I am enjoying myself. So the Atma Ratihi means the inner state of being with myself. I'm enjoying the ananda of myself as I'm having fun playing with myself in the world. Okay? So, and that one is a create, that Atma, that one who's sporting with the Atma, enjoying the Atma, is Kriyavan, acts in the world. Acting, I never act. But I'm engaging in the world, which is nothing but me. So acting, in fact, I never act. But acting, I never act. It doesn't mean that I don't act. The Atma never acts. So acting, I never act. Never acting, I act. So that breaks through a lot of myths when we think, you know, the jnani is not supposed to engage in the world. But for the jnani, the world is Atma. So where are we going to go that is not the Atma in order to not engage? See what I mean? There is nothing that is not the Atma. In fact, Swamiji used to tell a story about this old sadhu who was a jnani. And this is a made-up story. Maybe it's true. You know? But that jnani, he was a Shiva Bhakta. He was sitting, you know, and wherever he would, you know, try to rest his feet, whether he put his feet on the ground or he put his feet on the table, you know, there would always be a Shivalinga there. Every place he put his feet, you know. And they used to get mad at him, you know, because you're putting your feet on the Lord. But every place he put his feet, the Lord was there. And so they would keep getting mad at him. So he finally said, where can I put my feet? Where isn't Shiva? You show me. Give me one place where the Lord's not there, and then I'll put my feet there. I can't find that place. It's a beautiful story. The same thing. Where can I go that is not the Atma? So not acting, I act, right? Playing, you know, Atma Kridaha means I'm playing with you. Say I'm playing tennis with you. It's that type of engagement. I'm playing with you. I'm conversing with you. I'm engaged with you. I enjoy that. I enjoy being with myself. And enjoying being with you, myself, I enjoy myself. Because the mind is abiding in me, Atma Ratihi. So those are those two things, you know. And I engage in action, whatever action is there to be engaged in. Shankara there says, I engage in action, what do? Well, I meditate. I study. He's talking from the standpoint of sannyasa. I do jhanam. I study, I teach, I do what those things are for me to do as a sannyasi. I do those things. But what do? Say you're a jnani. You do what you do. You engage in the actions that are part of your prarabdha, your kriyavan, you act. But none of those actions are away from yourself, and you never act. You have to be able to see both of that. You have to recognize internally both birds, the jiva bird and the Ishwar bird. The Ishwar bird never acts. And the truth of the jiva bird is the Ishwar bird. So you have to be able to say, never acting, I act. And be totally serious about it. Never seeing, I see. Never hearing, I hear. But that's not saying, never seeing, I see. That don't take that to mean I really don't see. No. Not seeing, I see. Right? Because I have eyes to see. But the consciousness that illumines the eyes, that illumines the thought modification, is just abiding in its own light. I abiding in my own light, in my own being, illumine the mind, which uses the eyes, which perceives. Okay, so then, this one, Esha Brahmavidam Varishtaha, of all of those who know Brahma, here Brahma refers to the whole Vedas, Brahmavidam. For all of the knowers of Brahman, all of those who know the Vedas, it is this one who is Varishtaha, who is the most exalted, because the whole Vedas have for Tatparya, what needs to be known, the whole Vedas have this, Brahmajnanam, you know, as what called, the whole Vedas culminate in that. So the Vedas are vast. There are many areas that you can, especially in the Karmakanda, where you can become an expert in the Vedas. But Varishtam, the most exalted of all of those knowers of the Veda, is the one who knows Brahman. Because Brahman is the truth of the Vedas. Brahman is the being, the Brahmayoni, the one from whom the whole Vedas have come, right? The one from whom the whole creation has come. So all of the Vedas resolve into Brahman. So when one recognizes Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am the truth of all of this, is that one that is the most exalted of all of the knowers of the Vedas, because that one knows Brahman. The truth of the Vedas. Okay. Takes it just a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. You know, usually when, it depends on how we're talking, but usually use samsara for somebody who's a samsari, right? Mm. So this creation is not seen as Ishvara. You know, it's you're bound, if you're samsari, you're bound by the change. Mm-hmm. So samsara is usually a word used for ajnanam. Mm-hmm. But then we can just say, you know, it's samsara. After all, samyak saraha, everything continually changes. That's samsara. Right? You don't have to be a samsari. You
know. But that which continually changes is also mithya.
Yeah, it's all mithya. So the jnani, the samsari and samsara are all mithya. Mm. But you wouldn't consider yourself as a samsari if you know yourself as atma. Because atma is not a samsari. Mm. Right?
But there's still samsara.
There's still samsara. You can say it's a samsara. Here it is. Or you can say, here it is, Ishwara.
Or you could say, like it said in the verse, here it is myself. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are we done with those parades, or do they kind of keep going?
When are we going to be done with those
parades? I've got a question about the birds. How's the discrimination made between the two birds? I mean, it's like you can't have one without the experience of the other. Like we were meditating, and it's like you hear the crowd in the park and the sound of the door creaking. And it's like there's always a quality.
Well, the thing is that you can, there's viveka, you can differentiate between the illumined, there's not a distance between consciousness, it's not like there's consciousness and then the sound over here, mm-hmm. right? So there's no gap in between, but the consciousness is its own being. It doesn't change its nature at all. It doesn't vary. The sound will be varying, the perceptions varying, everything that goes on in the mind or through the sense perceptions, all varying. Okay, but the variety, even the labeling, that's varying. For instance, the door creaks, and then you make a comment, the door creaks. Okay, so that's like, I hear the door creaking. And then you can even have a judgment. That's irritating. That's a little irritating. You know? Kind of watch that irritation. Okay, so the door creaks. But these are all layers of perceptions that come and go. The consciousness never comes and goes. It's not varying at all. It remains constant. That's the discrimination. So then you say, is the constant consciousness, me, that is there, that is really the very self of the one who says, I am thinking or I am aware of the creaking door, right? That is the very being, right? But when you recognize that being the one that doesn't change, that's the Ishwara bird. When you say, ah, I don't change, that's Ishwara bird. The Jiva bird is the one who's saying, I am doing this, I am hearing. Right? Because actually, consciousness is not hearing. Consciousness plus the ears are hearing. Consciousness plus the ears plus the thought modification. That's what's allowing sound to take place, right? The consciousness isn't hearing. But the ahankara, the I notion, is what creates, that's the mithya. That's what makes the Ishwara bird into a jiva bird. Actually, there's only one consciousness there. But we behave as though there's two. Because of ignorance. This jiva is created through the ahankara that creates this superimposition. You see? So you're differentiating the changelessness of yourself from the perceptions, including the ahankara, which is also an object of awareness.
It just never seems that my experience is ever without the qualities of, like, perceptual.
Sure they are, because, like, say, for instance, the chimes have stopped. You've relaxed your body and mind. You're pulling your mind inward, so the focus is no longer on the sense organs, right? Which is true most of the time, like, not most of the time, but I mean, you're sense organs require the participation of your mind in order for them to work. Right? So if you're daydreaming, for instance, you're not hearing this. So as long as the mind is functioning, or the sense organs are functioning, those things will be illumined. But we can bring the mind into a state of quietude. Right? That's what we call samadhi. At that time, the mind isn't hooked up with the sense organs, and we've done japa or whatever in order to bring the mind itself to a state of quiescence and turn it toward the conscious being that illumines it. And at that time, there is nothing getting in, there is no competition. There's nothing being illumined. There's just consciousness with a mind that's totally quiet. So that's why we practice samadhi and meditative exercises, so that you can rest assured that your being is independent of the sound, etc. Okay, then, once you recognize that, even with the sound there, or the thought there, perception, feeling there, You can differentiate between the changelessness of you and the changing of the sound. But you need that confirmation to show that, ah, I'm really not changing, that's true. But we need that, we want that, we can have that, that's fine. But you can equally recognize it right now, here and now.
And you don't have to have had a samadhi experience, right?
You have to have the differentiation.
Differentiation, yeah. But not the samadhi.
What I would say, it's not a question of having to or not having to. Every time you make that differentiation, you have a little flicker samadhi experience because you've made the differentiation. To make the differentiation means at that moment you have recognized yourself. Right? You've recognized yourself. This word samadhi has become a big word. So we're expecting, you know, that we'll sit there and the whole universe will disappear. Well, it can. It can, if you want to, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's why we meditate, you know, to just. But you should use a simpler language, because when what are we doing? We're really just relaxing our body, so we're not aware of it. I'm still here. I'm relaxing the body and not aware of it. You know, I'm relaxing my mind completely, so I'm not. I have any tension in my mind. No competition in the mind now. Now what do I do? Okay, I'm still here. The tension in the mind is gone. Now, okay, so now there's just me without that tension. Now what do? I just let the mind fall into itself, into the self, like the pot falling into the clay. I'm still here, right? And it's just that I've relaxed myself to such a degree that I'm not perceiving anything else. You know, there's no subject-object at that time. But really, I'm sitting with my simple me. You know?
You've also said that this differentiation is a recognition of Ishvara as well.
Yeah. When we're talking about these two birds, the one that is sitting inside, that's not acting, just the conscious being, mm-hmm. That's Ishvara. That is Ishvara.
Oh. Right?
The jiva is the ignorance-born mithya ahankara. You know, the one that says, I am this, that creates that identification born of ignorance. That identification is not real. You know, you haven't become the body or the mind or the thought or the mood or the emotion. You haven't become that. But because there's self-ignorance there and no discrimination, that discrimination hasn't taken place, then the mind says, I am that. That's the ahankara, right? I am this. I, the very upset one, I am the conscious being, I am upset, for sure. Because no differentiation. Then you can also say the opposite. I am so happy, I am ecstatic. Because now you're identifying with that state of mind, or I'm dull today, or I'm sick, I'm identifying with the body. That's the ahankara. Actually, yourself is always just abiding in exactly the same way. And when the mind recognizes that, it has a home then. That stable presence of my being is the mind's best friend. It's because I'm always there. And so actually I become... The Atma becomes, in the, when you know, gestalt, when you have figure ground, I become more in the forefront because the mind loves my being. Because Ananda, the mind loves my being, and so my being is what is the more focus of attention. Not that I need the mind to be focused on me, but it just is, naturally. Just like you focus on what you love. You don't have to tell your mind to focus on what it loves. It does. That's what every samsari mind does. It focuses on what it loves. Where is the best situation for me at this moment? That, you know, that's where the mind will go. And if you can't find one, then you'll be scurrying around trying to create it, you know, or trying to get rid of the obstruction, or if you feel trapped, then your mind will just sit there and spin.
You know, the ahankara, it happens very quick, doesn't it?
Very quick.
Identified before you know it.
Yeah.
Is it still okay if you later on start to see it?
Oh, yeah.
You can objectify it, go like, oh, that's...
That's what that is. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and then once you've objectified it, then the next time it comes along and does that, your mind's ready for it, in a sense. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's almost like a skill, huh?
It's knowledge. It is a skill. It's once you see it, then you see it. But until you see it, you don't. You know? Yeah, looking back in hindsight is really good, because that's what gives the mind understanding of habit patterns and whatnot, habitual ways of thinking. And then when that way of thinking rises its head again, the mind's ready for it. You know?
But it's not always so black and white, right? I mean, it's sort of...
Well, there's every shade imaginable,
yeah.
I'll say.
I mean, in that, like, it could be like, you can be totally re-identified with...
Yeah, you can. But then you do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You're on your way. On your way home.
It seems like you need a certain, just sharpness or... You know, presence. You know, to have this kind of awareness, and it strikes me like when you're sick or you're really depressed or something like that, or even I think I've been thinking about Alzheimer's, that kind of thing lately. You know, like then how do you have that kind of sharpness? You know.
You know, when you're say if you have Alzheimer's, that'll be interesting for some of us if we ever get there. What that'll be like to be a
young
man.
You don't want that stuff.
Yeah.
No.
What kind of patients will be? I have no idea. But let's look at something a little more closer to home. Hopefully. Okay. Say you're depressed. Your mind is in full of that affect, of depressed affect. Now the question is, you can't just say, go away. Because usually when you're in a depressed state, it's in the body by that time. You know, it's already, you're already engaged in it. So it has to, it will take its time to go. You know? But now the question would be, how are you with that affect? And honestly, even with that affect, deep depression, dark, depressed state, yourself is still exactly the same. Experientially, I mean. That does not get rid of the dark affect that you don't want to have there, because it's painful. That's a pain. Depression is a painful state of mind. Okay, so, but what I'm saying now is, even in that depression, one thing that is... really a beautiful thing to notice, actually, is that your being is exactly the same, the me. And you should use your depression. If you have a depression or an agitation or something, use those states as part of your sadhana to recognize, see if you can recognize your own presence in that state. But that's not... let me finish a little bit more. So say you recognize your presence in that state. Now, still, that's not everything. It's how are you toward that state of experience? How do you hold that state of experience? Do you think out of the state of experience? By that I mean you're terribly depressed. And so now all of your logic, all of your thoughts are the thoughts of a depressed person. That's a problem, because then that will spiral you down. And that's natural. If you're in a depressed state, for your thoughts to be coming from the depressed state, you know, and that's depression has its own logic. Nothing's ever going to get better, and this whole life sucks, and I want to, you know, and you can't see anything into the future. There are certain ways that depression is. So we normally think out of that. But you can learn to think. Not out of that, but to think about that. Like you can talk to yourself, the one who's depressed. And you can say things, you know, you're really depressed. I know you're really depressed, you know. And then you could say, it'll pass. We just have to be with it. You have to wait it out. Mm. It's not that that's going to make it go away. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that now the ego, the ahankara, is not speaking from it. It's speaking to it. That is different. The recognition of your being that is there, right in the middle of the darkness, that's also different, you know. And then we have to work on what are the causes for the depression, you know. What are the unconscious causes? What are the cognitive causes? What are the physical causes? You know, it's the same like we would do with the body. What is the cause for a disease or the ailment in the body? It's so also, if you're a jnani, it's no fun to be physically ill either.
So knowing Brahman, illuminating myself as Brahman, illuminating this depression, doesn't make the depression vanish.
Well, I would say not vanish just like that. But that type of attitude will stop the buildup on the depression and give the depression a home, a healthy home, that will allow it to lift in its own time. Because we find once something has really entered into the body, you know, it has to work its way out, you know. But now, say you are thinking from that depression, then you are creating a vicious circle, making it worse, rather than giving it, you know, like say you're sick and you had the flu, and you take care of yourself, and you know, you say your mom or your partner or somebody, you know, makes a nice bed for you and brings you tea and takes care of you while you recuperate. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a much nicer scene to be sick in. And it's the same, you know, when you're internally riddled with depression or agitation. How do you hold that?
Yeah, I was thinking of an example, a personal example of like getting sick and then having like this lingering effect of like my brain just, you know, like just brain fog, you know?
Brain fog, yeah.
So I could think those things, you know, and having had these experiences, you know, of going to, you know, what is the me that doesn't change? And I thought I had that me that doesn't change. And then when I was sick, I couldn't experience the me that doesn't change. So then I thought, well, that must not have been it, because it's not here now. You know?
But, yeah, and it is there. So it is there. There's no possibility of it not being there.
But I couldn't
get
hold of it. I couldn't experience it. So.
Well, you know, if when that's the case, that's an important little piece of information.
Yeah.
Because you may have been looking for a state of mind that is a calm state of mind that is, as you use the word, alert and present,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so when the mind's not alert and present, then that state of mind isn't there. But your presence is much more personal than that. You know, so next time you're in a situation where you say, I'm not here. And you say, no, that's not possible. In fact, you are here because you're the one that's saying I'm not here. So you definitely are here. So who is it that's here? Who is it? These are important moments. And then the thing to do. these are little tricks.
Helpful hints.
then the thing is, then what you do is you look for what is here like right now, the me that is here right now, that is always here, that you can never get rid of. I don't care what the state of mind is, even the depression. It's true. I'm not saying that depression is a good thing or anxiousness or anything. These are painful states. The body can be in a painful state too. I'm not making light of that. All I'm saying is that yourself is there. And so then I want you to use those opportunities to see, okay, what is really me? And I think you're in for a real shock. If that's how it was for me, the shock was something like this. You mean it's me? 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 This me that I take myself to be is Brahman? Yes. This me that I take myself to be, that is the one that's present to all experience, that is not subtle, it's not a subtle experience, it's not a gross experience, it's not a good experience, it's a bad experience, it's not any of that, it's beyond all of that, it is me. It's just the one me that is the constant, and there's nothing more precious than it. But it's shocking to recognize what we're talking about. So if your mind says, I'm not here, don't accept it. Say, no? Radha said it was here. It must be here. It must be here. It must be here.
Well, the sense of me is there. I mean, even when you're...
Yes, so find that then.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
It's definitely true. You know, and it's not covered.
Yeah. Because even when I'm bummed out a little bit, you know, it's still a sense of me. The sense of me is there.
So what about when your mind starts recognizing the truth of that and relaxing into that? Because recognizes its stability.
Because you're so personal, that's why you miss it, because you don't think that which is so personal is Brahman.
Exactly.
You just don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so personal because it's you.
Yeah. Remember that ad on TV, that little old winemaker me?
Yeah.
The little old winemaker me.
That's it, bro. That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, being conditioned Catholic, you know, being brought up Catholic. It's almost the mind has been informed by the Catholic upbringing that it has to be something special. It cannot be that simple.
That's right. And the thing is, there is nothing more special than that. There's nothing more special.
Yeah, but what I'm also saying is,
I know what you mean,
like,
yeah.
That's then one keeps looking for equality, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not saintly enough right now to think that way, you know?
Yeah.
Me, Brahma, me, God?
Yeah.
I can't pay my bills or anything.
Yeah.
You can't go around telling everybody, I'm Brahman, so just cool it. Okay.
And I tried to talk to my mother a little bit about Vedanta. It's a big mistake. She said, that's just how the devil would talk.
But ahankara is tricky, though, you know. Because when you say, you know, I'm not. How could I be saintly enough? How could I be? That's all identification with the upadhi. You are the one that's illumining all that activity. One who says, you know, I'm not good enough, or I'm great, or let's say the total narcissist. There is nobody greater than me. You know, talking about the upadhi. I am the one who is the center of the world. Atma just simply illumines that, has no judgment on it. I just simply am present to that. I could say the opposite. I'm the worst person in the world. I am useless. I'm just nothing. Atma, I just simply illumine that. You know, the self, for both, the self is exactly the same. Say you take Mother Teresa, Gandhi, and Hitler.
And Bush,
all of them, everybody, all these well-known figures. Self is exactly the same. The me is exactly the same. It's not more, it's not less. Take the grasshopper. You know, the little grasshopper and the sparrow and the elephant and the human and all of them. The me is only one. It's not engaging. It simply is. I simply am. And you have to notice that truth in yourself. That is your self experience. You know. Meditation is so helpful. If we know what we're doing in meditation, we're not looking to create an experience. But it's so helpful because we're just slowing everything down. You know, slowing the mind down, relaxing the body, relaxing the mind, just letting things be without tension, without trying to change anything. And then just recognizing my own presence, bringing the mind into that recognition. It gives me an opportunity to, the mind an opportunity to come into relationship with myself, you know, instead of identity.
Do you have any recommendations for like local, like for training, I mean for meditation, I mean because it's a big industry, I mean like it's kind of, there are many different ways to go about.
I think we do it enough in here, just as we do in here.
Okay. I know that the Swamis have various like audio, like MP3s from the curriculum.
Oh, like that you mean?
The guided meditation.
Oh yeah, like the guided meditations? There are some guided meditations. Swamiji has some. You know, on my, I don't know about the quality of them, but on this arshavidya.org, capital N-I, india.html. There's some beautiful meditations by Swamiji on there. Have you been on that?
No.
India. After the arshavidya, arshakulam.org, /india.html.
Okay.
When I was in India this last time, Swamiji did some guided meditations at the ashram that were really beautiful, so I put them on the online there. But there are he has some meditation tapes from the ashram. Those would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you want to have a guided meditation, yeah, in that way would be fine.
Even the ones, nice. I don't know if they take them, but the ones from the 2-week course last year, those were really good. You could call John at the bookstore and ask him.
Uh-huh.
Or even the 1 week, because he was doing the same one all summer. It was very good.
Yeah. There'll be some different series of meditation talks, several that you could get. Yeah. I thought you meant going someplace. But
oh, yeah, no. Just
yeah, no, no. Yeah, yeah, no. There are some even... At the bookstore where they have some like a set of tapes or CDs where Swamiji also talks about meditation. Yeah, so I talked to John at the bookstore people. Hmm.